Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the RCL Foods annual results presentation. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to hand the conference over to the CEO, Mr. Miles Daly. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, and welcome to everyone who is listening to our investor presentation. I'd like to start on page three, which is the headline results for the year ended June 2018. We're pleased with the results in a year that we faced some significant challenges, in particular the Listeria crisis, as well as the continued dumping of chicken and sugar in the South African market. These are the key headlines, and we'll go through in more detail during the course of the rest of the presentation. I think firstly, EBITDA of 2 billion with a growth of 17% is acceptable under the circumstances. Our HEPS was up 52.4% to 0.96, clearly off a slightly compromised base, but we also did some good work below the EBIT line. And our cash generated was 1.8 billion, and we're sitting on a cash balance of 1.3 billion, which is nearly 20% up on last year. The biggest contributors to our EBITDA growth are chicken, driven by the revised business model, which we've shared with you before, and groceries really had a good year, both in terms of volume and market share growth. And as you'll hear a bit later, the sugar challenges largely impacted by price decrease, although we had very good performance from an operational point of view, and our sugar volumes were up some 30%. If you go to page four, our portfolio performed well with the exception of Millbake and sugar, and we'll elaborate more, as I said, later on in the presentation. Now, the impact of the drought and the regulatory environment on the chicken and sugar performance over the past 3 years is clear when you look at the three-year charts that we've provided, both in terms of the impact and the volatility. But certainly, I think our balanced portfolio is now starting to work in our favor, and we've got some very clear plans. Chicken, which we've already implemented some of those, and we'll continue to do so, and you'll hear more about sugar. If you turn to slide five, I'd like to just touch on some of the aspects of our strategy. You know, we talk about the six strategic thrusts. So the first of those is to grow through strong brands. And what is very pleasing is that RCL Foods consumer baskets grew at 4%, ahead of a market growth of 1.6%. And so that's quite significant. As you know, the consumer foods business has been quite muted, and consumer business in generally in the last year. And brand shares are a key measure of your relevance to consumers, and our brand strategies and investments in brands have strengthened, and our market shares with a number of our brands hold market-leading positions. What was very pleasing in this financial year, in the last 12 months, is we've got some new market leaders, namely Yum Yum, Nola, Canine Cuisine, and Catmore. So these are now number one on a 12-month moving average basis, which is a significant achievement if you think where we've come from. We have our entrenched market leaders, so we've still got Bob Taylor's number one, Macau number one, Omar and Pyman's, and they remain number one. And all of these are on a 12-month moving average basis. And we've maintained market position in Salati and Simply Chicken in a number two position. If you move to slide number six, which is our second strategic thrust, and that's partnering with strategic customers, really underpinning some of the brand share growth that you saw on the previous slide and the success that we've had there has been driven by the strategic customer partnerships and joint planning. So with our key customers, we have top-to-tops in which we go in a lot of detail of joint planning and getting the best for both businesses, and you can see that in the success of our brands. The pie category has been a star performer. We've invested in turning around this category along with our customers and again achieved volume growth of over 10%. Our logistics division has made some great strides and successfully partnered with Pick and Pay to launch a dedicated distribution network for the retailer's entire frozen basket of products. So all frozen products will now go through Vector, including the specialized ice cream category. So ice cream has created a new channel, namely Super Frozen for Vector, and this has been a significant project, well managed to date. If you turn to slide number seven, our third strategic thrust is extend our leading value chain. Our new 136 million rand pet food plant in Randfontein came into production this year, enabling innovations that are helping grow our pet food category. And Scott will talk a bit more about that later. But while it's early days, we really have had a great start with our new pet food brands. IT remains a key driver in unlocking business value, and we've got a number of initiatives that we've already implemented and will continue to implement, all about ensuring profitability systems and giving the business management greater insight in how best to manage the business. We've also centralized all our logistics activities into a single control tower, which is expected to improve customer service and efficiencies. If you turn to slide number 8, which is our fourth strategic thrust, and that's to expand into the rest of Africa. We continue to maintain our low-risk strategy for our expansion into the rest of Africa. We've been very cautious in this regard, and I think rightly so. And going forward, we've in fact narrowed our current geographical focus to mainly SADC countries for potential acquisitions. We've also restructured our activities to increase alignment between our export efforts and potential acquisitions. So essentially, we put all of that under one head. If you go to slide number 9, which is Inspire Great People, we've really made some good progress in this area. Our continuous efforts to accelerate diversity has earned us recognition from the Commission for Gender Equality for being a leader in our sector with a strong focus on development. And a highlight in the last 12 months included Women in Agriculture Leadership Development Initiative and training programs for women engineers, artisans, and drivers. We've also continued to build our talent pipeline over the last 3 years, and so 43% of our managers completed our leadership development program. We've now had 150 graduates entering our management trainee program, and we've had some really good success in that regard, and 931 employees registered on CETA accredited learnerships, apprenticeships, and internships. We've also invested 40 million in training more than 10,000 people. We've signed some multi-year wage agreements and continued conversion of casuals to permanent staff, and we've had a lot more stability within our workforce, which is very pleasing. And we've also made available a low-cost medical aid plan and health benefits to shop floor employees, with over 1,000 people signing on during this financial year. If you turn to slide 10, our sixth thrust is drive sustainable business, and this is another area where we've made some really good progress. And I'd like to just take you through some of the tangible things that we've done. So we've achieved 25% energy self-sufficiency through the co-generation of energy at our sugar mills, waste-to-value energy production in chicken operations, and solar installations. Our waste-to-value plant, which produces renewable energy from waste water at our Worcester chicken processing plant, provided 30% of the entire manufacturing site's energy needs. And the success of this has encouraged us to invest in a similar plant in Rustenburg in 2019. And here we expect to provide 65% of energy and 50% of water requirements. So really some great opportunities in this area that we're investing in. We completed the second year of a significant irrigation replacement program in our sugar operations, aiming to reduce our water usage by 30%. Another exciting area for us was converting what was effectively a CSI department in the business into an independent foundation called the Do More Foundation. This was launched in July 2017 and has enabled us to attract external partners, which has significantly amplified the impact on communities that we operate in. And our community-based joint ventures delivered more than 846,000 tons of cane from more than 8,000 hectares of irrigated land. If you go to slide 11, just a snapshot that we do each year of our key deliverables. So we've made good progress on our key deliverables for 2018, and to highlight just a few, the first two have been very good, and as I mentioned earlier, resulted in significant improvement in our brands, performances and brand shares. And also this focus that we've had with these key customers and looking at each of the categories with them and how we improve our joint positions in that regard. And probably the one with the red robot is the area that's been our biggest challenge, and that was restore sugar profitability. So as I said earlier, you know, this is still a challenge for us, and it's while operating KPIs were very good and volumes were up over 30%, the margin and profit were impacted by a significant volume of dumped imports. And so, as I was saying earlier, volumes were up, but the impact on EBITDA was around 44%. So we were declined as a result of around 20% price decrease. If you turn to slide 12, we're talking about the next chapter, which is sustainable quality of earnings. And for me, that's all about improving the quality of our business, whether it's underlying volume growth, whether it's maintaining our GPs or improving them, looking at our overhead structure, our investment in our brands, and getting a better answer. That's one key component of it. The other is the whole sustainable environment, ensuring that we are careful with the resources that we use, and clearly to get a return on our investments. And you see number one is a big focus will be maximizing the return on invested capital across our category clusters. We'll continue to invest behind brands and systems. And I think the other one to pull out there is sugar. We really do need to restore the profitability and build a sustainable business model for the future. And this is going to be a big focus area for us. And we're having a really fresh look at the entire sugar business and the opportunities that may exist for us there. On that basis, I will now hand over to Rob Field. Thank you.
Thank you, Miles, and good morning to everyone. I'm going to start on slide 14 and do my best not to duplicate what Miles has mentioned in terms of our performance so far, nor what my colleagues will go on to cover in their detailed sections. But overall, obviously, it's a pleasing set of results for us. On this slide, I'm just going to tease out and talk to some of the lines that may not be covered elsewhere. So just some insights around key lines at a top line. Obviously, our revenue is down slightly, but key drivers of that being the downsizing of our chicken operation and generally the deflationary environment that is sitting behind most of our categories that consume commodity-based inputs. Moving a little further down, just to comment on the significant decline in the share of profits of JVs and associates, that's largely RSSC, our associate sugar business in Swaziland, and they faced very similar fortunes to our local sugar business, and so John will cover that in some detail. Then lastly, just to wrap it all up in terms of the dividend that was declared, and that's the final dividend of 25 cents, which takes our full year dividend to 40 cents, up 33% from the prior year. Slide 15 is market context that is very well understood by you, the audience, and so I'm not going to spend much time on it. It is also evidenced in all the recent results publications of listed retailers and food producers. Suffice to say, it remains a tough market to operate in. Slide 16 is a portrayal of our EBITDA performance, and it provides some perspective of our underlying results. Both in the current and prior year, there were a number of material impacts, which the divisional MDs will talk to as it affects their specific area, but which pretty much net off at a group level, meaning that our published EBITDA growth of 17.1% is actually quite similar to what we would call and reference a underlying EBITDA growth of 16.4%. So that's just for your reference. Slide 17 then walks forward that EBITDA performance and growth of 17% down to the bottom line delivery of headline earnings at a 52% growth, and shows you some of the contributors to that result. The only two that I want to highlight on that chart is the meaningful reduction in our finance costs, so a good job done within that space, and good cash management generally across the business. And secondly, the just for your noting, the significant tax benefit that we enjoyed this year relating to an energy allowance that we qualified for within our sugar business. So that's a 64 million rand cash tax benefit sitting within the current year's tax line, contributing to that expanding performance down to a growth at a headline earnings level. Slide 18 is merely there for you. It sets the scene for the divisional presentations that will follow, so I'm not going to spend any time there. Slide 19, talking to our cash flow performance in the year, and again, I think it is a sound performance. Even though our cash conversion ratio declined versus the prior year, that was more a feature of the working capital release that happened last year as a consequence of the downsizing of our chicken business, as well as the commodity prices generally across the board coming off. So the working capital investment or slight release this year is very nominal, and I think is still a good performance. The results and balance of the presentations have covered off and will cover off the two improving lines across finance costs and tax paid, so I won't spend any time there. Then there are some smaller lines, but let me just highlight them so that people have an understanding of what they are. The $56 million that we've invested in Matsonox is what Miles referred to as the waste-to-value plant in Worcester, at our Worcester chicken plant. The increase in the small increase in the investment in the associate of $26 million is an increased stake in RSSC. And then the proceeds that we realized on the sale of $115 million is largely related to the chicken farms that became dormant as a consequence of the chicken downsizing that we went through. So that is a pleasing progress in terms of us having been able to realize the sale of those dormant farms. Slide 20 gives some color to our working capital position. It is acknowledgingly an increased investment. And what this busy slide seeks to do is just to highlight where that is happening, and it's largely within our sugar stocks. So the bounce back from the drought has meant that we have much better production flowing through our system, but that also translated into a higher stock holding at the end of our June financial. Again, John will talk to some of the dynamics at play in terms of imports within that space. Both our receivables and payables balances were impacted by our year-end cutoff being 1 July Sunday, it meant that both receipts and payables drifted into the first day of the new financial year. So both of those metrics, whether you express them on days or percentages, are up, but are pretty offsetting. And then also just to bring some further perspective to that trade receivables balance, obviously within there are some fairly material components which are non-trade debtor related. So our last line on that bottom left table is an attempt by us to try and show a see-through of what our true underlying debtors' days are looking like on our trade debtors. So obviously then from the trade receivables balance, we are excluding things like effectively stock that is within Vector's business at CSP stock holding that is obliged to be included in our receivables balance, as well as other prepayments. And then on the revenue side, which is the expression over which you derive your days calculation, obviously we're using a full reference of what our trade sales are as opposed to what our published sales are. I think the market understands that we only report Vector's turnover on its distribution revenue and only for its external customers. So if you gross those effects up, you get to a number of 41 days, which is more akin to what you would expect a normal grocery business to have in terms of 30 days from statements. And in fact, it's a pleasing result. And the last comment on the bottom of that slide really says that if we hadn't had that late receipt come in from the year-end cutoff issue, that 41 would have actually been 34, which I think have been a very pleasing result, albeit slightly worse than the prior year. So hopefully that gives you some further color on our working capital investment and how we're managing that aspect. Slide 21 talks to the new language we have within our business that we've shifted away from what was a RONA, a return on net asset reference, to a ROIC, a return on invested capital, which is a measure which arguably is more aligned with a shareholder reference. And so the bottom table here just really expands on that, and you see that there's been an improvement in that published ROIC up to 8.1%. Still not at the level that we are comfortable with, and obviously on a published basis is below our cost of capital, but remains a very significant focus within the business. What we've drawn at the bottom of that chart is just another perspective of it, which says all of these numbers are quite materially impacted by acquisitions, the Food Corp acquisition specifically, which meant we had a significant write-up in our goodwill and intangible balances on our balance sheet, as well as carrying some level of amortization through our income statement. And were you to exclude those elements, you see quite a significantly different picture from a ROIC perspective. So again, that's just there for your perspective. Slide 22 deals with our capital expenditure, which happens to have finished off very similar to the prior year, although the tables on the right suggest that there's been a shift away from expansionary capex to some increased replacement elements. You'll recall in the prior year our expansion was largely led by our beverages and pet food plant investments. Vector had the tail end of its new infrastructure at key depots around the country. And the shift into replacement this year was led by, which was also funded by an insurance payout, but the silo reconstruction at our Pongola mill, as well as some further cane replant following the coming out of the drought. Otherwise, the levels are pretty much in line with the prior year. And I think the balance of the chart is pretty self-explanatory. Lastly, onto slide 23 and 24, dealing with our debt situation and our package, and coming to the end of what was a five-year package in place. And the chart continues to demonstrate the very good cash management that's taking place within the business, with interest costs meaningfully down, and the remaining significant headroom on our covenants. Our second to last bullet repayment of $1.1 billion is due in February next year. So we're busy assessing our refinancing options, especially that we have earned a better credit rating by our performance over the last couple of years, and that we find a market at the moment where funders have an increased appetite for our business. So we'll be able to report back on that in subsequent reporting periods. But overall, debt and interest looking very sound. And that's where I'll end and hand over to Scott.
Thanks, Rob. The contents of slide 26 are detailed better in slide 27, so let's move to slide 27. We had an outstanding groceries result and a solid chicken result, which resulted in a 95% increase in consumers' EBITDA. If you've seen other chicken companies' results, you would have expected a step change in our chicken result, which we saw, but even more pleasing is the fact that our groceries result stands in stark contrast to the rest of the food market, which is under significant pressure. And in the groceries result, and groceries, by the way, includes mayonnaise, peanut butter, pet food brands, sorghum, pies, beverage, and speciality. So in consumer, it's the non-chicken brands. But we saw strong volume growth, good market share gains, and margin growth almost across the board. And that resulted in an EBITDA growth of 15.4%. And on an underlying basis, on the next slide, you'll see it was actually 21%. A good measure of how one is really doing versus the market is this company called Asked, who publish about 80 to 90% of all the grocery sales into the supermarket and wholesale trade in South Africa. And on that basis, we showed a growth for the 12-month period in groceries of 4.1%. That's a volume growth versus the market at 1.6%. So a pretty stagnant market. And that was even better than 4.1 if you think that for the bulk of the year, we didn't have our Poloni and Viennas in the market. And they have occupied quite a sizable portion now of our added value business. And so a very pleasing result. As I mentioned, chicken, a solid result despite, as we'll talk about later, some significant financial impacts of listeria and avian flu in the reporting period. Moving on to slide 28, I'm not going to go through the detail of the underlying results. Suffice to say, though, that if you take the once-off upsides and the once-off downsides, our results for the year is pretty similar in Rand's millions. And the base is slightly changed, which gives us an underlying result of 75% growth in EBITDA versus the 95% at the statutory level. Moving on to slide 29 then. The way I've tackled this year's presentation is to talk rather to the drivers and opportunities across groceries categories rather than to talk individually to each brand or to each category. So starting with share and margin then, virtually across the board, we had an exceptional year, with the exception of beverages, which I'll pick up just now, but delivering a strong set of results on the back of solid volume and market share growth. Underlying groceries EBITDA margin improved by 1.3%, whilst the growth in volume and market shares were achieved on the back of that margin growth as well, which we're pretty proud of. four key brands became number one market leaders for the full 12-month average for the first time. And what we inherited or bought from Food Corp 5 or 6 years ago was a string of brands with about half of them as market leaders and about half of them as number twos or threes. Effectively now, all our key grocery brands are market leaders. And in our entrenched market leader space, Bobtail, Omar, and Pieman's grew further market share to entrench their position even more strongly. What's worth pointing out before we move on to the next slide is that, as Miles said, your market share is a measure of your relevance in society. And if you're a market leader, you're the most relevant brand. But even more importantly, if you're growing share, you're growing your relevance in society. And if you're losing share, you're losing your relevance in society. So moving on to slide 30 then. Innovation is, as we know, the lifeblood of the future of a branded grocery goods company. And so what you're producing now becomes the mainstream stuff in 5 or 10 years' time. And innovation, therefore, is a very important part of what we do. And we've had some key successes in the pet food area, where the new factory enables us to do intrinsic differentiation of actual product, which is pretty unique in South Africa at this stage. We've had a good set of new introductions in the pet food area, and that combined with the exposure that this has given us a very strong result in pet foods. More interestingly, prior to our new factory capabilities, we weren't able to produce premium cat food. Cats are very fussy eaters, and so we were only able, without the technology that we now have, to produce mainstream cat food, which was Catball, which has done very well in its own right, rising to market leadership this year. But now we're able to launch products like Feline Cuisine, which are unbeatable as far as palatability and nutrition goes in the market, even by the Zed brands. And Feline Cuisine, as a consequence of that, and a number of other things that we did with our customer partners, rose to 12.5% market share in just its second month of launch last month. We've also had successful innovation in our Pieman's area, particularly in our partnership with Spar, but also in our partnerships with the other key accounts. Yum Yum Peanut Butter, we launched our snacking sachets, 15-gram sachets, and they've added a nice chunk of volume and, more importantly, image to the Yum Yum brand, which as you know, is now a market leader and therefore preferred by more South Africans than any other peanut butter brand. Number one, Macheo, the beverage business, has been under pressure, but that obviously is something which we have a detailed plan for, and innovation is key to that. And in the speciality area, where Woolworths is the bulk of our customer, that is innovation-oriented by definition. And so we were pleased that our performance relative to our competitors in that space, in most cases, was better. We move on to slide 31. I wanted to point out some of the things that we're doing here, which have led to some of the successes in groceries. In the front end, in essence, understanding, aligning, and partnering with customers is a massively important part of a branded consumer goods company. It's all very well to have the brands, but unless you're aligned and partner with the customers properly, the brands are not going to go anywhere. So it's great to have strong brands as well as a nicely aligned partnered front end, but the partnerships and relationships and joint planning have been core to the success of groceries, with clear benefits for both them, our customers, as well as for us. And despite significant step changes in marketing spend and activity on our brands, we still saw margin growth. And the relationships on the front end led significantly to that. And on the right-hand side, you see some pictures there. The top one is a picture of our Feline Cuisine launch in Pick and Pay. And you can see that's Pick and Pay being pretty confident of Feline Cuisine, giving us a massive display, despite the fact that this is the first time consumers had ever seen it. And the picture below that is a double plate spread, which we designed in conjunction with Macro, which also featured the dominant part of their marketing to their customers over the period of our pet food relaunches. And then supply chain. Efficiency in the supply chain is about cost, but probably more importantly, it's about customer service excellence. And so we drove significant efficiencies and at reducing costs, but more importantly, even the department or the division or the subdivision within our business that drives our supply chain activity, we call ICSI, which is our terminology for integrated customer service excellence. And the thought behind that is that everything that we do in our business should be tuned towards customer service excellence. We move on to slide 32. I've headed this little section turnaround because these are the categories that deserve special attention from us in terms of issues that they might have had. The first paragraph refers to the Pieman's brand, which when we bought it from Food Corp was in quite a wobbly state in terms of its sustainability. We had our work cut out to turn it around, but this year was the first full year of the consequence of that. And we saw fantastic volume growth of 10.3% in a pie category which is not growing in terms of volume. And so significant step change in market share and a very meaningful step change in profitability for pies. And we feel confident that our pie business should be able to retain its growing presence in our business. As I said, beverages remains a challenge. A number of other competitors have launched into this category over the last year. And we have a very, very aggressive plan to turn that around. But I guess beverages is not of the quantum that changes our results meaningfully. Nevertheless, though, we are determined to retain and grow our 72% market share leading position and recover some of the margin contraction which we've experienced in beverages. The only area that still requires some significant turnaround action. On slide 33 then, speciality. Speciality has done pretty well for us over the last 4 years since taking it over as a consumer division. However, there have been areas that we needed to clean up. And one of them was the strategic decision to exit up the prepared portion of speciality. What is the prepared portion? It's the type of products which are very fiddly and very handmade, like pizzas, meatballs, salads, sandwiches, etc., from which we made very little profit, if any, but contribute to 80% of our complexity and our issues. And so we decided to exit that. It doesn't change our profit situation at all. In fact, enhances it a little bit. And then the beauty of that is that we'll be able to focus on what is our core strength in the Woolworths area, which is baking. And that the subcomponents of that are breads, chilled cakes, ambient cakes, desserts, etc. And with that, we'll be able to have a lot more energy and resource focused on far fewer issues and will result in stability, much greater stability and growth going forward, we have no doubt. Moving on to slide 34, then onto the chicken area. As I said to you, the chicken industry in general has had a better year. But what I want to point out before I go into any of the chicken detail is that the primary reason for that is RCL's reduction of size of our chicken business. What we took out of our chicken business, moving from 4.8 million birds per week to 3.4 million birds per week, is the equivalent of the third biggest poultry company in South Africa. And that, in conjunction with the collapse of some of the other smaller players in the tough times of 12 months ago, meant that the chicken market, the chicken industry and market could come into a better supply and demand balance, which resulted in what you've seen in chicken businesses in general over the last 18 months, which is a much better performance. However, as I'll talk to you on the slide, on this next slide, which I'll get to just now, nothing has changed as far as dumped leg quarters are concerned, and let's get to that in the next slide. But looking at food solutions, we saw a turnaround in food solutions fortune starting to grow again, which was pleasing given the tightness of the markets in general. And the new chicken business model obviously reduces our variability in chicken's results. So a much greater proportion of our chicken turnover now is in food solutions and added value, and less of it in retail. In the retail area, I just wanted to remind you, as Miles has mentioned, in the national panic of the ST6 strain of listeriosis, Rainbow Peloni and Viennas were returned from the trade, despite government recalling only Rainbow Peloni as a precaution. Despite extensive testing by RCL Foods, government, and other stakeholders, Rainbow products have never tested positive for ST6. So the long and the short of that is that we got a huge hospital pass from government, which resulted in the destruction of value in our chilled processed meat business, as well as in our Rainbow brand as a whole. And we have to recover from that. And it talks to the next point. Although global food standards, safety standards, permit up to 100 colony-forming units of listeria per gram as totally safe, Our government has specified zero colony forming units per gram in final product on shelf. It's a difficult measure to meet, but as a consequence of that, RCL has invested in new technology and processes to meet this specification, and we are meeting that now with our Poloni on shelf and our Viennas coming onto shelf in 6 months' time. On the right-hand side, that's a picture of the sticker, which is on our Poloni. It's only been on shelf now for about 3 weeks, and sales are encouraging, but not yet at the level of what they were before the listeriosis crisis. And then on slide 34, looking at mainstream chicken. Chicken import levels have remained high, as I said earlier, so there's no improvement in the situation with regard to chicken imports. Yes, there has been a safeguard duty imposed on European chicken and from the EU, but that is unlikely to change the situation with regards to imports because avian flu meant that they were limited in terms of their export to South Africa anyway. And what I keep saying about this is that exporters of leg quarters are price takers, which means no matter what the duty levels are, if they've got nowhere else to sell their leg quarters, they have to reduce their price to be able to sell them. And so duties and tariffs are unlikely to assist the chicken industry to any significant degree. As I mentioned, the entire Rainbow brand was negatively affected by the listeriosis crisis, and we've had to carefully manage our way out of that. And we're not completely out of the woods yet, although we have recovered to a large extent. As Rob said, avian flu had a material impact on profit. And if you look at the last point, bullet point on that slide, you could essentially add about 227 million in profit to our chicken results to get to what we would have hit if we hadn't had the avian flu as well as the listeria crises during the year. And the last thing I want to say is that it's very important in the context of the fact that tariffs and duties are unlikely to change the reality in the chicken industry. It's very important that government finds a sustainable solution to dumped imports. We know that for every 10,000 tons a year, about 1,000 people could be employed. And I want to emphasize that Rainbow also could easily up its production and re-employ people as a consequence of us and our government finding a sustainable solution. And with that, I'll hand over to John.
Thanks, Scott. Good morning, everyone. Let's turn to slide 37, feedback on the sugar and milling division of our operation. The first comment was it was obviously a disappointing result for us, with EBITDA down 16.1%, driven mainly by the sugar and our mill-bake results. Revenue was down primarily due to, as Rob said, the raw material drop in prices driven through our animal feed section. If you turn to slide 38, EBITDA down by 16.1 was driven by the animal feed performance having improved on the back of a lower commodity price, as mentioned. Milling performance was up on the previous year due to improved volumes and margins. Baking results were down due to lower volumes and margins. The sugar performance is well down due to the flood of imports, our sales mix as a result of the low world market prices, and also finally the drop in the local market prices, which was done to combat the imports. If we turn to the next slide on page 39, there are two adjustments that are brought in to give us our underlying results. The first one was the gains and losses in procurement, which amounted to 80 million in animal feed. And the second one was the silo claim, which came through of 138 million. If we turn over to slide 40, the underlying EBITDA in animal feed is down by 3.9%. And that was due to internal volumes dropping off due to the change in the chicken business model and the drop in the number of birds that we had in our chicken business. We had improved feed conversion ratios in our animal feed, which also dropped the total tonnage down, but a very pleasing result as the technical performance of our feed is improving, and it adds to our EPOL brand a reputation. There was a margin squeeze in the Molatech operation, that's our molasses-based animal feeds, due to an increase in the molasses price of 12%, which we couldn't pass on into the market. This was offset by much better H2 volumes, particularly in our EPOL business, with the return of some of our lost customers, and an improvement in market shares in both in the game, horse, and ruminant sectors of the animal feed business. Turning to page 41, EBITDA in Millburg decreased by 18.3 million. That was on the back of a much better result in milling. Volumes were up, and our margins improved in the milling, again on the back of recovering lost customers and a very good performance and efficiencies in our milling operations. Our brand, Supreme, is also gaining traction in the marketplace, and we're starting to see volumes tracking through in both the retail and in the industrial markets. However, our bacon result was poor on the back of a number of issues that we had in the baking sector. We had a strike in Rustenburg, which lost us significant volumes. We've had increased competition in Polokwane and Zanin, and we've also had labor settlements that were well above inflation in the baking business. I think the encouraging thing was, well, we lost some volume, relatively flat, but we lost a significant margin in the baking business, which impacted on our end results. However, we are seeing a recovery in the latter part of H2 with volumes coming back, and we are seeing now some price increases coming through. So we're looking towards a much better result in the baking sector going forward. There's also improving efficiencies and a reduction in costs in a number of our bakeries with better resourcing and better systems and better processes being put in place. If we turn to slide 42, the result in sugar was well down at 84.3 million. And there are a number of problems in the sugar sector. Many of them you've probably heard about already, and in fact, Miles did allude to some of them. The result was impacted on by very low-priced imports coming into the country with tariff levels set at inappropriately, and also a slow review in terms of some of the tariffs that have been put in place by government. This reduced our local market sales of our locally produced sugar, which ended up with us having to export that sugar into very low-priced world markets. I think you'll all be aware that there are global surpluses of sugar, and obviously that impacted on global world market prices, and we reaped the consequences of having to sell greater volumes into that very low-priced market, which impacts significantly on our bottom line in sugar. The other thing that impacted us in terms of the result was we took a 20.7% price decrease in sugar during the year, and this was to try and combat some of the imports that were coming in. And obviously that had a significant impact on our bottom line. Some of this was offset by a crop improvement, and Miles has already mentioned that coming out of the drought. We're almost back to our previous normalized levels of production now, and the crop is really looking good. Water storage is significantly up. And the conditions for the coming years are also looking positive. The mills also performed very well as benchmarked across the industry, both locally and globally, and we've seen significant improvements in terms of efficiencies and productivity out of our mills. We've also been able to get, as a result of cost reduction, some improvement in terms of the performance. The financial performance of our mills. So it's been a mixed year for us. Those things that are within our control, we've been able to really leverage up and try and get the best out of it in the sugar business, which I think is good for the business longer term. It has meant that we could reset the base for sugar. And the challenge has been imports, low local market prices, and also more recently the impact of sugar taxes, which is playing out in terms of local consumption. We're not sure yet of what the impact of the sugar taxes is. It's very new in the marketplace, but we are seeing off-takes, particularly to the beverage industry, dropping off. And we will need to see the next couple of months as to what that full impact is likely to do. But that drop-off in terms of local consumption means that the industry has to export more sugar, which then dilutes the price and, again, the financial performance. All of this has meant, and as Miles mentioned, that we have to review the sugar business model. We're actively doing that to see how we can better improve the returns in the sector of the industry. Recently, we did obviously get an improvement in tariff, which will help these results, but it will take a bit of time before that plays out into our financials. I think with that, I will hand over to Chris. Thank you.
Thanks, John. If we move to page 44, and just looking at the logistics headlines, the first point, despite the significant impact of chicken restructure, logistics delivers EBITDA in line with the prior year. We look at the chart, we can see revenue down at 2.6% and EBITDA flat on last year or slightly up at 0.6%. And this was driven largely by the successful implementation of our mitigation strategy, which I'll talk to more in the subsequent slides, with achievement of targeted revenue growth opportunities and key cost rationalization. The third point talks to, and I'll talk to again a bit later, the take-on of the full pick-and-pay cold chain, which is well underway and on track, and has certainly helped mitigate some of our headwinds that we've been facing. If we turn to slide 45, we talk here like everyone to some of the headwinds, everyone else like some of the headwinds we faced, the chicken restructure, subdued economic conditions and listeria. I think we've heard it time and time again that retail volume reflect the generally muted current economic conditions. And the, as Scott said earlier, if you look down the bottom left of the chart, you see the asked market research volumes. Total market down 1.6% with retail at 1.6 with retail at muted 3.8. We were also impacted by listeria quite significantly, not just with Rainbow, because we represent other principals in this category, so it had quite a big impact on Vector. And offsetting this to some degree, and pleasingly, food service sector has shown some growth with fair to good growth across our customer groups. And you can see the people, the customers we represent on the bottom right chart, Chicken Licken, Spur, Nando's, Burger King, and more recently, although they're very new, Popeyes. So pleasing growth in the food service area. Moving to slide 46. The headline, we talked to the mitigation strategy successfully implemented. And here the key focus was on winning new business and cost optimization in our warehouse and transport network to suit our revised business requirements. The two big initiatives that we focused on was the implementation of a four-hub customer-lined warehouse network, which really means we took our small satellite depots and converted them to cross-stock facilities. So what we do there is they no longer are stock holding facilities. They're really just a cold box. We send a primary load into them, a primary load being a bulk load. We put it across the floor into the trucks and off they go in smaller trucks to that area. So a massive piece of work that took us a number of months to do. Was successfully implemented. And further to that, we successfully implemented our transport control tower really to drive and improve transport optimization and service levels. And all of these functions we've had spread geographically around the country, but we put the different areas of, and if you look at the bottom right chart of planning, routing, tracking, customer service, which is our call center, and the reporting and analytics into one geographic location in KZN and our Durban office, or our Durban hub, if you like, and that has driven key transport savings and optimization. So two massive pieces of work which had a significant impact on reducing our cost base and at about a 10% headcount reduction, bearing in mind that we employ about 4,000 people. Turning to page 47, if we look at, and the last slide that I'll talk to, the targeted new business achieved. So pleasingly, the full take-on of the pick and pay cold chain is on track and laying the foundation for a sound future partnership. I think I've said it before that we'd have a 10-year contract signed with pick and pay. The second point I talked to here, the take-on of the includes new retail principles in the frozen business. So we now do the total frozen business for pick and pay, as well as a new category for us, Miles alluded to earlier, in the ice cream category. This is also a first for pick and pay of putting frozen and the ice cream category, which they refer to as super frozen, together with one supplier being us, and now we deliver their full basket. And that we're rolling out by region, the ice cream category. So the frozen is nationally done, so we do their total the frozen basket. The ice cream basket we're rolling out by region, and that will be completed by about March next year. So in conclusion, our dual mitigation strategy of new business take-on and strategic cost rationalization coupled with the multi-temperature capability, which I've spoken to includes super frozen, positions Vector well for the future. Thank you. And with that, I hand over to Miles.
Thank you, Chris. Turning to slide 49, which is our prospects, we anticipate recent modest recovery in market volumes are expected to continue, but the tough trading conditions are there and will be challenging. The recent increase in VAT and petrol price mean that consumers remain under some significant pressure, and the fight for market share will be fierce. So the market share gains that we've made, we don't think people are just going to allow us to keep those, so they're going to try and regain them back. So we're prepared for that battle. And our focus will be on our grocery brands in terms of driving market share through strong innovation and brand investment. And so each year we've made significant step change in our marketing investment off what is a significant lower base than it should be. And so we continue to allocate disproportionate amounts of funds to our brand investment. The revised chicken model has delivered the expectation, and substantial focus will be centered around restoring consumer confidence in the Rainbow brand following the Listeriosis impact that Scott alluded to. The sugar tariff has been updated, but the positive impact will only become evident once the built-up imported stocks have been sold through the market and the supply and demand balance is restored. As you know, the world market price is incredibly low, so any extra sales or surplus sales and stock that needs to go into that market comes at a well-reduced price versus local market pricing. The volume recovery of milling is expected to continue, and the initiatives that we've implemented at baking are expected to start bearing fruit. So we're optimistic that we can push the business in the right direction over the next year. And as you heard from Chris, logistics will continue to seek new business opportunities and restructure its business model on the basis of reducing its cost base. So thank you very much for listening. We will now hand over for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star then one on your touchtone phone, and that'll place you in the question queue. If you ever decide to withdraw the question, you're welcome to press star then two on your touchtone phone to remove yourself from the question queue. Just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one.
Judith, we have quite a few questions on the webcast, so we're going to start with that. I'd like to hand over to Scott.
Okay, the question is from Anton Smith of Peregrine. The question is, do you think that with your new chicken business model that margins are sustainable around the 6-7% range? The answer to that is our margins will be more sustainable, however, not in that sort of tight range. We still have, you know, 40-odd percent of our volume going through the retail consequential market, we call it, the commoditized sector, and therefore, you know, we will be we'll be less likely to run up losses, but we'll have a more stable margin band that will be wider than what you suggest.
Second question from Sam Watkins at All Weather. Is 2018 a peak in CapEx, and will the business generate significant free cash flow in 2019? It is expected that our investment will sustain itself around what we have seen in the last couple of years, around the 800 to 900 million level. And so what we've done is we've constrained CapEx over the last couple of years, but confident that it's still generating significant amount of free cash. And our driving metric in our capital allocation within the business has shifted, as I said earlier, to that return on invested capital reference. And so unless we're absolutely convinced that we can actually generate a return well in excess of our cost of capital, we're going to continue to be very constrained in our spend, and so confident that any spend that we do make in the business, even if it is from that free cash generated, that it will generate an acceptable return well in excess of our return on capital.
The next question is from Jatin Richie from Avior. He says, thanks for the presentation and well done on great results. Thanks, Jatin. And then he says, please discuss how peers in groceries have been responding to your market share gains. Is it that peers are cutting prices, and could this prove a significant challenge to RCL Groceries' profit growth in the year to come? So the answer would be, of course, any win of market share puts pressure on competitors in a low-growth market. So it means that their volumes are likely to be declining. We expect a response. Having said that, responding on price is probably, in a branded grocery company, is a measure of last resort. And so it's an indication that you don't trust the strength of your brand anymore, and you have to cut the price or the value perception to be able to respond. And so there are many other measures of responding, and it becomes a battle of wit as to who wins that before one ever resorts to price. But there's always that risk, depending on who the competitor is.
Jatin has a follow-up question regarding major CapEx projects for F19 and whether we can speak to the timing of those project benefits in terms of flowing to the bottom line. On slide 22, we do give some coverage of the major capital projects that we've committed to for the ensuing year. The biggest one there is our investment of 300 million rand in a similar waste-to-value plant that we have in Worcester, which we are now going to invest in Rustenburg. That project hasn't started yet, so that spend will only happen during the course of the financial year, so the benefits will likely only flow in F20. And then there are some other relatively smaller amounts, but the 60 million speciality consolidation of their sites and rationalization of their sites is being spent this year, and those benefits will flow toward the back end of this financial. And then we have an ongoing amount of spend in our underlying supporting ERP systems, which we believe and hence are convicted about continuing to spend in that journey, delivers a significant amount of business benefit. And so those are the major ones that we've listed, and kind of just reinforce the previous comment that I made regarding how we are approaching any spend within the business, and we're doing so very frugally.
Question number five is from Shane Watkins, All Weather Capital. The question is, has RCL entered into any commercial arrangement with RemGrow regarding the managing of the Unilever Spreads business? So the answer to that question is no. Firstly, I'd like to say that it's now the RemGrow Spreads business. And in terms of the RemGrow Unilever transaction, they have an arrangement in place regarding the management of the Spreads business. However, RCL Foods is currently reviewing possible commercial management opportunities that would be beneficial for us post that arrangement between Remgro and Unilever coming to an end. Obviously, Remgro have opportunities in that regard as how they manage those, manage their new business, and we certainly believe that we can play a role, and we are reviewing those commercial opportunities.
Right. The next question is from Jatien again, and it's John here. Is it likely that sugar profits could fall in FY19 as import stocks continue to weigh on profits, or have you taken price increases of 20% that will help? The answer to that is yes, price increases will support, and we are busy looking at price increases at the moment, and hopefully we'll land them quite soon. But there are a lot of other factors that play into this, not least of all the mix in terms of how much sugar we need to export into that very low world market pricing arrangement, and also whether consumption declines in terms of the sugar taxes in the beverage sector, and also the volatility in terms of the currency. So all of those factors play in, and at this stage it's difficult to take a view on how much imported sugar is actually in the market. We have the SARS information, but we're not quite sure how much is sitting in warehouses, in bonded store, etc. So that's a difficult one. And then in terms of the sugar tax, obviously only implemented in April, so it's probably still playing out in terms of sugar consumption at the moment. Early indicators are that consumption is down, and as mentioned, it's difficult to put a percentage to it, but we can see it in terms of our offtake to the beverage sector of the business. So that's an answer to the question six. An answer to question seven, also is a 10. What sugar production growth in FY19? We are and have had very good results in terms of the performance of our agricultural sector and the production of cane in all our mill group areas. And we're looking to get closer to the capacity that we have of 700K. Thank you.
I just want to check if there's any questions on the audio line. We do have more from the webcast.
Yes, there is a question from Dumi Mutlante of Coronation Fund Managers.
Hi, morning, Jen. Thanks for the result and for taking the time to chat to us. John, just talking through sugar again, two questions, if I may. With regards to mix, can you give us a sense of how much is SA and how much is world/exports currently, and your feel for what that figure might be in the coming year? And then my second question would be, you talking about restructuring the sugar business, what are some of the plans or ideas you have around that currently?
Okay, and in terms of the mix, I think we're getting back to the original levels of mix around what is exported. You will recall from the sugar industry that you know, it would probably work out at around 20 to 30% of the sugar that is exported. So that figure is hard to put a fix on it, because we're not sure now what's happening around consumption and what's happening with the imports. So that's just a guide in terms of where we are around the mix. And that's from an industry perspective, which obviously plays out into our results at the end of the day. Sorry, and the second question was in terms of the business model. I think it's very early days in terms of the business model. We're really embarking on that journey now, and it's difficult to give any indication really of what we're likely to come up with. But, you know, some of the focuses around costs and structure, et cetera.
Sorry, John, thanks for clarifying that. If I may, just as a follow-up, is there the possibility that you exit the sugar business? Because right now you're getting towards nameplate capacity. Your efficiencies are as good as, or if not better than peers. And now it's just a matter of price. And at this point in the cycle, I'm trying to work out whether you don't think sugar can be sustainably profitable in South Africa.
I think that with some interventions, we're likely to ensure the sustainability of that that business. The makeover is extensive in terms of what we're doing. It will talk to a lot of things in terms of how we structure the business before, but we, at this stage, have no intentions of exiting. It is a business that will contribute, we believe, both to the company and to South Africa in totality.
Thanks, John.
There are no further questions at this stage.
So we switch back to then the webcast questions. I'll take the first one. It's Rob here from Corbis Deliers from 361. He's asking, on the chicken division, could you provide some more information on how much of the feed costs have been brought forward? So our normal policy is that we do procure forward. I think it's quite important that the market understands the shift in our business model, meaning that of the total population of requirements of raw materials, more of it now represents what we provide through in terms of finished product of chicken through to our quick service restaurant customers. And as such, that is more of a negotiated and agreed forward procurement strategy to support their menu board pricing strategies. It's a very similar amount of forward cover that we have in place to what we've had previously across all of our exposures, all of the underlying commodity raw material inputs, as well as currency. But importantly, a bigger proportion of our chicken business now is represented by the contractual type quick service restaurant supply. And then the balance of our feed business where we supply externally, we've always historically had an approach whereby we would be typically closer to the market. So our window would be more narrow, so maybe closer to a 3-month forward cover position, and that has remained and is continues to be appropriate. So there are two very different components of our overall forward procurement book, but that hopefully essentially talks to them.
The second part of Corbis Villiers' question is, what are the KPIs that need to be met to continue with the beverage business? So let me just first say that continuing the beverage business is not up for debate. We're very pleased with the beverage business and the capabilities that it gives us for future expansion and growth. In terms of the KPIs, though, and let me give you a little bit of a sense of the beverage business. At about the same time as we built our UHT facility, which gives us long shelf life, that obviously added a significant chunk of overheads. At the same time, a number of competitors entered the market, and more recently, Coca-Cola entered the market with a Maggio product as well. So we took an additional on-cost in overheads and competition ratcheted up. And that's the driver of the contraction in margin. But we feel confident that with our new capabilities, we're also able to enter categories that we weren't able to before. We've only ever played in Maggio. And now we have the ability to enter other beverage categories. And so we need, in terms of what are those KPIs, we need volume, obviously, to spread the overhead of the new business unit, which we'll get through innovation. And we need that innovation to be at the same margin or higher than our existing, which would be the second KPI. And so those two things are part of the turnaround plan.
Right. The next question, I think, is from Brendan Jack at Bethlea Capital. And the question is, what rate of decline are you seeing in terms of imported sugar stockpiles? Firstly, and secondly, expected time frame for these stockpiles to be drawn down. The first question is really unknown because we're not quite sure what's lying out there. It's unknown to us. So we are aware of sugar landing in the country, so we know that there's some definitely in stock because large quantities did come into the country, which are recorded as imports into the country. How much is sitting in stock? Unknown. In terms of how long will it take to work out, it's also dependent on the volume of stock that's sitting in the warehousing. My guess is that it would be 2 to 3 months for it to work out fully under the new tariff arrangements and the protection that has been put in place. The next question is from Lulama, independent Christian, and in which regions do you intend to sell your product from the utilization of excess capacity in Millbank? How much will the capacity amount to? Generally, the quantity is driven by demand. Yes, we are looking at a bigger footprint, but the focus at this stage is really to get better distribution in the current footprint of our operation, and just starting to look to expand that footprint. We do have some spare capacity, mainly in the Gauteng Pretoria area, and we hope to utilize that capacity to grow our volumes into that particular region. Thank you.
Let's go back to the audio line.
There are no questions as exchange.
Okay, so we've got a further question here from Lulama Kornkop, independent. It says, you mentioned that you'll be exiting the prepared foods category. Have you found a buyer yet, and have you had any comments from the Comcom with regards to any restrictions on who RCL may sell to? So the answer to that is yes. In terms of the product and some of the assets, we have found people that are prepared to take over with our hands, and we are only entering the Comcom phase now, so no comments yet.
So the next question that we have here is from Jiten. A question from Kuswood of Prudential. In hindsight, do you think the TSB acquisition was ill-timed? I think the decision to acquire TSB was a long-term decision, and we were, you know, in hindsight, having the draft in year one has impacted on results. But I think, as you'll appreciate, we weren't buying it for a 1 or 3 year period. We're buying it in perpetuity. So we're very comfortable with the underlying decision to buy the business. However, we have had some real headwinds in this last 3 year period. I think we've got some good plans in place to get ourselves to a position that we think is acceptable, or more acceptable than we are now, clearly, but an acceptable return on that investment. Thank you.
Next question is from Chitin. Again, he says, why, even if one adds back listeriosis impact, was the chicken business margin only about circa 7% versus Astral, which reported mid-teen EBIT margin? Previously, RCL has indicated that KFC is profitable and high single digits, and therefore why did regular commoditized retail segments not enjoy the same benefits as Astral? Chitin, my calculations are different from yours. So we had, remember, we had a listeriosis and an avian influenza issue, which together I think accounted for 227 million, as indicated in the slide, as well as the fact that we account for our distribution costs slightly differently to Astral, and therefore there's a proportion of our cost in Vector, which would benefit us as well in the future. So our internal calculations is that would put us at significantly over 10% if you added those back.
Okay, then there's our last question. Well, there's a question here from Dino Constantino, JP Morgan. Could you please give us a sense of size of the recent price increases you've heard in baking? How much have market volumes recovered post-year end versus this 1.6 growth in the category you compete in for F18? What do you think is driving it? In terms of the price increase, I think obviously we wouldn't want to give you any of that information. In terms of possibly on the volume side, I think we've seen some nice growth in terms of our footprint coming through, positive growth against some of our competitor sets, particularly the Mpumalanga and the Limpopo areas, where we have a very strong brand in terms of Sunbake. I think that really what's driving that growth, I think, is back to basics and good business practices. We're getting the quality right in terms of our bread. We're getting our service levels up, and we're getting our costs down. So that's really what's contributing to some of that that growth. Hopefully that answers your question, Dino.
Jatin, it's Scott Pittman here again. I just want to come back to that question about our margin versus other chicken players. The one thing I forgot to mention was that we didn't have Colonia and Vienna for almost the entire year. And those two on their own, you know, give us a profit contribution of close to 100 million. So that would account for another big chunk of why it wasn't a normal year.
Just a last check on the audio line.
There are no questions on the lines, ma'am.
Okay, it's Miles Daly again. Thank you very much for dialing in. Thank you very much for all your questions, and we appreciate your support. Have a good day. Thank you very much. Cheerio.
Thank you. On behalf of RCL Foods, that concludes this morning's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.